Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
Hey, it's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this is episode 355 of the Columbia Calling podcast, the penultimate episode of the year. Now, I know many of you enjoyed 354 with Nicole Lesmes because it really was an insightful look at what's going on regarding the implementation of the peace accords in Colombia. And of course, Nicole is an expert and she's traveling around the country, in particular to places like Caquetá and Meta, and taking a look at what's happening for the people on the ground. I want to take this moment to thank Emily Hart for her continued support by providing the newscast for the Columbia Calling podcast. This will be her last newscast this year in 2020, as she's taking off the last couple of weeks, going back to the UK for a little bit before returning to Medellin. She's been an overwhelming help in this and has steered the podcast in a new direction, I think, with her newscast reports. We will be talking this week on episode 355 with author Lachlan Page, who's in Australia, and we'll be talking about his new, or his debut novel. It's a work of fiction called Magical Magical Disinformation. So have a listen, because it's quite a funny book. It's a kind of tragicomedy. I've read it myself, and we chat quite in depth about it. I believe I'm the first person to give him feedback outside of that of his family and friends. Next week, we'll take a different tack as Joey Sick, and you'll remember him from episode 309 from late January 2020, before the C word happened. And he'll be taking the reins and talking to me about my reflections on the podcast this year, and as we look back at some of the more memorable episodes. So that'll be a fun episode with Joey Sick on episode 356, which will be the last episode of the year. Thank you again to everyone for listening. I'm going to leave you in the capable hands of Emily Hart, and then we'll be back with Lachlan Page. Check out his website. That's lachlanpageauthor.com. Buy the book, support indie authors. Thank you again, and don't go away. And we're back. This is segment 3 of episode 355 of the Columbia Calling podcast. As I had told you previously, our very special guest this week is author Lachlan Page. He's in Sydney, Australia, so we've done some mathematics to work out a time that's decent for both of us. But he's out there, and well, he's written a work of fiction based in Colombia. We'll talk about the work of fiction, because a lot of it doesn't seem like fiction at all. But I wanted to get him on the show because we've got to promote one another, don't we? We have to help one another when we've got projects like this out there. His book's just come out. It is selling. It is on Amazon. It's called Magical Disinformation. So take a look on Amazon. Take a look in your local bookstores, especially if you're in Australia. But let me just take this moment to say welcome on the Columbia Calling podcast, Lachlan.
Thanks, Richard. I've been a long-term listener, but first-time speaker.
There we go. It's taken me 355 episodes to get you, but you've got a book out, so there we go. We've got the big thing behind it. What is your? We're going to start, because all of my listeners will be like, okay, so this guy wrote a big book, a fictional, novel about Colombia. So, but what is your relationship with Colombia?
I guess back in 2009, I traveled to Colombia and I came down through Canada, Central America. I'd spent about a year kind of in that area of the world, learning Spanish and doing a bit of volunteering and such on the way down, and arrived to Colombia and love the country like everyone does. You kind of fall in love. It was less touristy than some of the Central American countries. Yeah. Lovely people. And I did the classic gringo route from Bogota, Medellin, Cartagena, Santa Marta, Taganga when it was just kind of starting up. I went to the Lost City as well. That was when you could actually sleep in the Lost City, which you can't do anymore. And I really loved it. And I kind of wanted to stay at that stage, but I had a teaching job lined up in South Korea, so I had to head to that for a year. And so I did that. And then at the end of that kind of teaching gig, I thought about Colombia and thought about coming back. And I thought, I'd spend a year there and see what happens. And I guess, like everyone, I've kind of met a girl, got a better job teaching at a university, and I was also teaching at the British Council, and then ended up staying 4 years in total. So,
very good. Very good indeed. Just a second here. And so tell us a little bit. I mean, okay, so you fell in love and you ended up in Colombia and you're 4 years or so, and now you're back in Sydney. I want to know a bit about how this book came about. Did you write it while you were in Colombia, I would say, because I've read the book, so I want to get this out there. It's like, I read the book and so much of it feels that it cuts. I want to say it cuts really close. The line between fiction and non-fiction is almost non-existent there. There are references to, I'm going to say it again, okay. I mean, it's called Magical Disinformation. That's a play on, magical realism and the Gabriel Garcia Marquez. But this fine line between fiction and non-fiction, you've got the mention at one point of the anti-corruption czar being jailed for corruption, a fact which happened, which still seems ridiculous to this day. And you got a reference as well to the bombing of it's the General Santander Battalion, which, happened there in South Bogota. You've got mentions of all these executive security firms and analysts and so on, of which I was an employee for all of 2 great months. And then you're talking about journalists, and of course you've essentially subbed out BuzzFeed for VizFeed. It's pretty close indeed. And I'm reading it, I'm going, it just seems like a day-to-day recounting of what we live in as let's say transplants to Colombia. So what I want to know at the end of that spiel is, did you note down these things as they were taking place in Colombia and then write the book when you left and were back in Australia? Is it easier to write away from the location, or did you start writing in Colombia itself?
There's a lot of theories about, you should write when you're away from a place because you can see it more clearly. That's, some type of writing theory. But no, I started writing when I was back in Australia because I was doing a master's part of the time while I was in Colombia, and I finished that. And I kind of didn't really know what to do next because I had this gap in my my time. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of began thinking about writing a novel. And I guess the original idea came from Our Man in Havana, which is, the classic Green novel, which I love. And I read that during that time, and I thought, this is, I should say reread it. And I thought, this is very, this could be written today. You could update it a little bit, and it could be, a modern novel. So I wrote it, in Australia. So I did a lot of research reading back, and a lot of these things I had in my memory, but obviously I needed to research to look back at it. So a lot of research, and it is that fine line between fiction and non-fiction, and I guess that's it's definitely a work of fiction, but all of the events are based in some reality. With the anti-kidnapping the head of Gaula.
Yeah, there were two. You had the anti-corruption and the Gaula, so the anti-kidnapping Gaula, who was then kidnapped.
Yeah, so there's a funny the way I came to know about that is actually in Sydney. My wife and I went to see documentary that was in the cinema here called, I think it's called Cuando Silencian Los Fusiles, or mm-hmm. El Silencio de los Fusiles, mm-hmm. And it was about the peace process, and we went there, and it was kind of full of a lot of Colombians and a few Australians, or, you know, people that, you know, you could tell weren't Colombian, and yeah. We were sitting there, and it's quite serious, and there's a lot of serious topics there. They interview members of the FARC, and they interview a lot of politicians and some of the negotiators, and there's a scene where they mention that. They say, oh, what happened to this, the Gaula head, and they said, oh, well, he was kidnapped, and the whole audience just erupted in laughter, and all the Colombians, and I could see, you know, some of the Australians kind of looking like, why are they laughing? That's terrible. But it was just, I think, one of those kind of absurd things that in Colombia happens, and, you know, there's a kind of dark, kind of comedic side to that, I think, to that kind of area. But yeah, it does kind of balance that line between fiction and nonfiction, which I think is what, you know, magical realism is about as well, that kind of putting in a little bit of kind of magic or supernatural elements into a nonfiction book. Well, I think, but this is definitely a work of fiction, I should say.
Well, it's yeah. a work of fiction, but as you say, you've pinpointed on you know, serious fact, and that's, I think that's important too, because of course people want to take something away, you know, aside from the dark humor and aside from perhaps some of the more ridiculous things happening in Colombia, you know, people want to take away something that they've learned. Talking about, you know, you've taught in universities, taught in the British Council and so on, but do you have a literary background? Was that the master's that you were doing?
No, the master's was in linguistics and education, mm-hmm. so I don't really have a, like, formal literary background, but, I mean, I read a lot and a few online writing courses, but nothing, you know, nothing kind of in a university or anything, but just online writing courses, a lot of practice, and a lot of reading as well.
Reading, I would say, yeah. I mean, because nothing but admiration for anyone who can sit down, and in particular, a work of fiction. I mean, that's it. It's the creativity. Yeah. Nonfiction is another story altogether. You know, to be able to sit down, we have to admire this capability, and incredible. It's not everyone can do this, of course. But you mentioned Graham Greene, and I did see the sort of element of Our Man in Havana. I could see that with Jardine, the name Jardine. It always also seemed, you know, our protagonist almost seemed as well like a character from maybe Evelyn Waugh. That's, you know, between Greene and Evelyn Waugh, actually amongst my favorite writers. And the construction of the book for me also feels a lot like a war novel because of the way, and I'm not going to give away what happens. We're not going to, because you've got to get out there and buy the book and read the book. But, you know, the way it develops, you know, the sort of tragicomedy, I would say, that takes place. It's like, you know, that really is. I could see that coming out. Yeah, I don't know if we're allowed to say the title anymore. Is it Black Mischief and things like that?
Yeah.
There is a similarity. So you've definitely been inspired by these writers. And I know that you have mentioned others as well, Orwell, you know, and all the classics and what I've read about you in my research. But, you know, we'll focus on a few other points here, but I also want to know, you know, the essence there is one thing. There were a couple of things that obviously are focused on a lot. One, you know, we delve into the world of ayahuasca or yahe, which again we've dealt with on this show. In order to research that, did you go to an ayahuasca retreat and you know, understand what goes on when you drink this sacred Amazonian potion?
A lot of research in terms of, in Central America, actually in Guatemala, I went to a ceremony. It said it was ayahuasca. I'm not sure if it really was, because I don't know if they have it up in those parts, or if they do, I'm not sure, you know, how authentic it is. But so I've participated in that, and in Colombia, I'd been to one just outside of Bogota, just as a participant, or really just in the kind of run up to it, where they do a lot of talking around the fire and and that. But a lot of research. There's a lot of good documentaries out there that I watched as well as kind of background research. And there's it's getting very, very popular in terms of a lot of I guess Westerners going down to Peru in particular and delving into that. So so it's an interesting aspect, and I think. I think it's something. And actually, also back in 2016, we went to the Amazon to Leticia on a trip back to Colombia, and there's a lot of talk of ayahuasca, and they have the ceremonies, and a lot of the indigenous people there will tell you about it. So, kind of little collections of research there, but I think everyone has a different experience under it. So I'm not sure. The one I've written in the book is probably. Maybe a little bit of a cliched experience of drawn out parts, but everyone has, I think, different experiences from it.
Don't say cliche. Say it might have been a universal experience.
Could be, bringing everyone together.
One together and stuff, because there were moments in there as well. And I will make another literary reference: is that when Jardine ends up is this moment riding the bull down the Avenida Septima. There is obviously some connection there to whatever he's been taking, and of course it felt, and here comes your biggest compliment of this recording. I felt for a second that I was reading something from Mikhail Bulgakov, the Master and Margarita. So I thought, I felt there was something transcendental taking place. So that was cool. For me, was an important part, the bull section.
Oh, thank you. I haven't read that book, and I don't even think I've heard of that author, I have to check that out.
Well, I'll send you a list.
it's funny, that part in it, I was almost going to cut it out, but it was based on, I read an interview with Garcia Marquez, and he said that he used to live in the center of Bogota, or at least work and study there, and he used to say that he would like walk around and pretend that he saw animals walking around in the streets, and that was kind of like a Kafkaesque moment for him, or his kind of realization of incorporating those like fantastical elements in the real world, so...
I like that because there was a reference to it, wasn't it? It was, after Cafe Romano, and he said that's the first time he saw a deer or something. You did make a reference in the book.
So. So that's what I think he said he saw he was imagining he saw a deer on one of the old trams in Bogota.
Well, there you go. Yeah. There's that magical realism in there as well.
Yeah.
So you explore it, and there you go. There's the proof. Because I got into the depths of the book, and I've taken out segments, and I have read it all. But there's the proof that I read it.
Thank you very much. This is kind of the first feedback I've had as well.
It reads very easily, which is again. I mean, I don't want to have to wade through. I've got two children. Reading anything is tough enough. I'm allowed to read a magazine article. I feel like I've succeeded in something. So the fact that I was able to read it over a couple of days is great. There are things that you've also. There's a lot that takes place in that town of Taganga, which you mentioned at the beginning of our chat here, at the top of the chat. When it was just starting out, it was just a fisherman's village with a couple of places to, lay your head. They weren't anything special. You just lay your head somewhere pretty much. Now it's turned into, I would say, the equivalent of a sort of full moon party in Thailand there. And you make a lot of references to a bar called La Brisa, which I assume is El Garaje, up the hill there in Taganga. Set us right.
I first went to Taganga. Actually, first with that bar, I think when I went there, I think it was called La Vista, but that was back in 2009. I went back there later. I think it's changed names a few times, but I think it's the famous. Yeah. It's a bar on a hill, on the hill leading in. Beautiful view over Taganga, and everyone. Well, when I went there in 2009, everyone in the town would pretty much end up there because I think it was the only place open late. When I went there in 2009, there were probably two or three very good hostels, and then the rest were just kind of makeshift. Hostels that had been kind of thrown together, and it was a reasonably quiet. It was still there was a lot of gringos there, a lot of backpackers. It's still a very quiet place. But then I went back, you know, a few times when I was living in Colombia. So this was, you know, 2 or 3 years later, and it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And I haven't been there for 5 or 6 years. I don't know what it's like now, but I can imagine it only got bigger and, yeah, probably like you say, more full moon party.
I haven't been in years. The last time I went, I was kind of a bit disenchanted with it. You know, it's not aimed at someone like me at all. So, you know, maybe when I was first there, I don't know, it was 2006 was the first time I went, probably. That was something else, you know, and I could just sort of live in flip-flops and wander down to the bay and then just go back up to sleep. I mean, pretty much what I did.
Yep. I think that's the Taganga mode.
Yeah, pretty much. Just switch off. Yeah. But, you know, and you, again, explore this. And this is interesting to me because I, you know, as a freelance journalist, I get calls from around the world when something bad has happened. Rarely when anything good has happened, but when something bad has happened. And of course, with the bunker, the Israeli bunker that's up on the hill.
Yeah. There,
and you make reference to, I want to say, Jovich or... the character's name in real life would be Moshi. But you make this reference to it, and it really, you know, it's there's a sinister element to it, despite the way that you write it in a, let's say, an easy to digest fashion. You know, the menu for drugs and obviously prostitution, it really exists.
It's been a kind of I mean, if you just look into it, there's a lot of there's a nice side. And when you're there, you don't really know. You wouldn't really notice. I think you could easily spend a few nights there, spend a week there, and you would never know what's going on. But a lot of, especially recently, there's been a lot of very, like you say, dark activity that's been happening there, and a lot of organized crime and different kind of sinister elements, I guess, that are taking over. So.
And you talk about the madam as well, and I guess this is the one, you know, who flits back and forth, who's, I guess, recently jailed in Cartagena. She's going to sing soon. She's going to talk about some of the people that she's worked for or, you know, has been in the employ of. It's obvious. But so you've got it. Yeah. I mean, that's it. You've got it all in there. And that's the thing that's so interesting. You know, again, you know, I live here, been here a long time, so I can jump from one fact to the next. And they are facts because it's just a few name changes. But how do you feel? I mean, because you have to aim this at a wider market. How do you feel that, let's say, your buddy in Australia is going to take on all the information? Because there's a lot of information in there. You know, you are wading through the intricacies of the bizarreness of Colombia.
Yeah, it's a tricky balance because you want to make it, like you say, readable, that somebody can read through it and kind of not understanding all the intricacies and the little details of Colombia. So that's a tricky process. And there's a lot of things that I did cut out or simplified to make it easier to read in that sense. But I think reading it, because I mean, obviously I've had friends read it and they've who don't know Colombia that well, and they've said they got the story. There might be a few of those little tangents they don't realize, you know, the significance of it, maybe as much as, you know, someone like yourself would. But I think when I read a book, and especially like when I read a book that has those elements, I kind of find it interesting, and then I kind of, after, I'll go and research and like, well, where does that come from, or did that really happen, or does this have basis in reality? And I kind of follow down those lines of interest. So I hope if, you know, people reading it, they'll who don't know Colombia, perhaps they might read that and say, well, did this happen, or is that something based in reality? And they might look it up and they might learn a little bit more and learn some of those, I guess, lesser well-known stories, because I think obviously the a lot of the stories out of Colombia that you see in the media are drug or cartel related stories, and there's kind of, you know, one or two narratives you see you know, on Netflix or in a book or which is, you know, a necessary part because that's the history of Colombia. But yeah, I hope people will learn a little bit about Colombia along the journey of the book.
I think you're certainly informing. So I have a tangent on that. Is that this last week I got a call out of the blue. My manager in Montpos erroneously gave out my phone number to someone who called from England to Montpos, Colombian, who's lived in England, in London for 40 odd years, and she made some excuse about it was a documentary being made. And so my manager immediately hears that and thinks, oh, well, that's got to be something to do with journalism, and that will be Richard. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, so I get this call on my personal phone, and you know, I'm berated for about 30 minutes for focusing too much on the negative. And I actually don't think I focus too much on the negative. I just, you know, you find people to interview and you talk about what's going on, and you find positive things and you talk about what's going on. And you know, we've done tourist shows, we've done travel shows, we've done upbeat shows, and there are other reality shows and stuff. I mean, how would you respond? Because I had a half an hour of this lady berating me, and I just wanted to say at the same time, is like, you know, however long she must have lived now in London or in the UK, it seems to me that she's forgotten why she left in the first place. You know, it's a long time. Whereas you have, let's say, the diaspora, the Colombian diaspora in Miami, for example, who are always going to be, you know, more akin to the attitudes of Cuba, the Cuban dissidents and so on. But I mean, how would you respond to someone who says, "Oh, you just focus on everything that paints us in a bad way"? What would you say to someone who got your personal phone number?
I'll have to remember not to give out my personal phone number at all now.
No, don't do it.
Yeah. I think, from my point of view, I guess in the book, I've tried to provide a balance. You know, there's obviously negative things. Mm-hmm. But also I've tried, you know, there's a journalist character who I think is quite positive, the Colombian journalist. I think the character of Veronica, who's in it, who's the kind of protagonist's love interest, she's a very positive character. And I mentioned, you know, various times about how, you know, Colombians don't like people associating them with cocaine or with the drug industry, and how that's kind of damaging and people don't like it, and mentioned a lot of the positive things. So I guess I tried to create that balance. So I'd probably say that, you know, like reality's a balance of good and bad. You know, I've tried to provide that, the two sides. I guess from my point of view, as if I'm a writer of a thriller or a kind of an action novel, you've always got a bit of a get out of jail card, I think, because if it was a nice, fluffy book about how good Colombia is, there'd be no story in terms of that market. So, but I guess from your point of view, you could probably say to her that, like, of all the articles you've written, yeah, some are bad, but I'm sure you've written some good articles, and you've done a lot of good to balance that out in your career. So
I got a bit frustrated because, and she said it on the phone, it's like, I can hear your frustration. I said, you know, I've set up businesses in a place where really international tourism did not reach, or minimal, and created international tourism. And I said, you know, so at the end of it, one of my sort of bugbears is that from the very lowest element to the top element, I have to deal with corruption. And, you know, I know it's inherent in the society, but you go 12 years into having a business, or 11 years into having a business, however long it is, and it's the same thing. Year in, year out, and it doesn't seem
to improve.
And that's where the frustration is. And I said, but you know, I've written guidebooks about Colombia, where you obviously err on the side of positivity about everything. You know, you're going to get the best view here, and this is the best place, and this is the way. I've written that, and I've written travel articles, which of course and you have to mention the negatives. And I know that Colombians have there's a stigma against them, and I know that they end up being discriminated against, I would say, a certain degree. But, you know, we live in this country, and I love this country, and I love living here. It scares me from time to time, a lot of the time at the moment, but it's, you know, however many years it's been now, you still need to take into check what's going on. And this goes on in your book. You're not shirking it at all. You're putting it in there. But again, it comes in a comedic fashion. But I would hope that your reader could tell that, you know, once he's seen the details that you've put in there, that there is a reality behind this. You're not making this up. Colombia has a long way to go yet. That's what I think I'm getting at there.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it is that balance, you know, because and also just any kind of news story, I guess, in general media or news story, it's always a negative that gets kind of people want to read about or people – because if everything's good, there's nothing really to report or write about apart from everything's good.
Well, you want to know, where you are is better than somewhere else. You know, if you're reading it in London and everything's, you know, everything's gone to pot there, but whatever. Mm. But you want to know that someone else is doing worse. That's why you read the mainstream. So there are a couple of phrases, again, a couple of lines, and I've picked out as well. And it kind of follows on from what we were saying. You've got one of your protagonists, I want to say Paco, says, "This is Colombia, mijo. It can always get worse." I mean, that's, you know, when a Colombian reads that, they'll either laugh or they'll want to crucify you.
I feel like that phrase, I've never heard a foreigner say that, let's say, or like but a lot of Colombians would say that, you know, I'm a member of a lot of kind of Colombian Facebook groups, like, you know, Colombianos in Sydney, and that's something, you know, that they'll put up little memes about, about, you know, things like that, about kind of, and I guess you could always argue if you're from the country, you have kind of carte blanche to you know, say whatever you like about it. But I think that's a very Colombian phrase. I think that's something a Colombian has probably said to me various times, you know, so.
Yeah, I think but, you're right there.
Yeah.
But that's that point, the carte blanche, isn't it? It's like, you know, the whole thing is you're the foreigner, so don't criticize. But anyway, I liked it. It was in there, and it's an important phrase. And then the other one, of course, you know, it's, again, we're coming right to the end of the book, and it's the quote, "Although in Colombia that's a tough job, the truth usually outdoes the fiction." And there you are. There's the book in a nutshell, isn't it? And because it is the truth. You have dictated these things, and it does outdo fiction because you wouldn't make this stuff up. I mean,
you
wouldn't make it up.
Yeah.
It just sometimes you just say, come on.
No, and I think even from my book, it could probably be 20 books written about all of the individual scenarios, and especially around, like you were saying, about the madam who's arrested and who's going to talk. There's a whole story about that I just, you know, that I can't believe no one's written a book about it. And there was the case with the secret Obama's Secret Service agents in Cartagena, and I think the woman from that, she wrote a book which I haven't read, but that could be a whole book in itself. Yeah, I think, is it Daniela Suarez?
Daniela, something like that. Yeah,
Daniela.
She's friends with someone I know on Facebook.
Ah, right. Yeah, I think she might be a next guest for you.
Well, I don't know how good her English is.
That's true.
She, I think she's living in the somewhere in the Middle East now.
Oh, right. Well, like, that's I didn't know that. Okay.
I think she's in Dubai. I can't recall. But yeah, you got that in there too. I mean, the Secret Service Hotel Caribe scandal there. Now, so you're married to a Colombian.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
How similar is she to Veronica?
I'd say, you know, I'd say that the parts that are similar to all Colombian women are similar to her, but she's not a lawyer in the book. She's not a lawyer. She's in a very different industry.
Okay.
But there's always, you know, parts that you will use from your relationship, but it's not, I wouldn't say, you know, that's her or that's, you know, the other bits are taken from, you know, reality, but I'd say those characters, I think all the characters I've taken, I've fictionalized them very much because I don't want to write about someone I know or a friend or family because...
You get in trouble.
I think if I did that, people would, they'd see themselves in the character, and they might, you know, I might be getting the angry phone call. So yeah. I've deliberately, made them different to the people that I know.
There was a part in that, in the descriptions, and I think in the description of the argument, I think she makes a reference or something to Jardine rolling his eyes. See, I get in trouble for rolling my eyes. So
never do that. Never,
Don't do it at all. Please don't. It's really not appreciated. Yeah. I'm getting in trouble. And I think it's the only way I can respond without saying something that's untoward. Isn't it better that I just roll my eyes than say something I will later regret?
It will be noticed, yeah.
It is. That's right. I just got it.
Says a lot.
No, I just smile. I just smile.
Yeah.
And, you know, agree.
I think a lot of that interaction is probably, you know, I think it's kind of normal interaction between a, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, and or husband, wife. So I'm sure people can relate to that.
Okay, so I know as we wind this down, I was checking your blog. Update your blogs for starters. We want some updates
and
secondly, we need to, what was it? You have on the website that there will be another book coming.
Yeah, I've got I'm only a quarter of the way through it. So I've got the idea, the basic idea, and I'm working through that at the moment. But it's slow going. Hmm. So I'd probably say not till 2022.
But it's a follow up to this one.
It's a follow up. So I can't give a lot away because it hinges a little bit on some of the ending. But you could probably still read it without reading the first one. Okay. So I can say it's got a bit of a Venezuelan flavor, I think, this next one. So that's keeping in that realm, but it's not based in Venezuela. So.
Well, keeping it timely. I mean, Venezuela is not going to be out of the news for a bit right now. So keeping it timely, it out while you should have got it out in the next 40 days while Trump's still in president. You know, we never know what's going to happen. Because you do make reference to the whole Castro Chavista plot from Venezuela and so on. So you do make reference.
Yeah.
I guess if you wanted to speed up the writing process, you could just read, you know, a few of the weekly news magazines here and indeed the national newspapers, you'd be able to, you know, glean quite a lot of information to be able to to fictionalize and speed up Jardine's let's say evolution in book two. Well, I think it's amazing that you are embarking on a second book to make a series about this. This is very, you know, I could see that happening, and the character of Jardine is definitely strong enough upon whom to build a series. And I wonder how the relationship with Veronica will fare in book two. This is the question now.
Well, you have to follow along.
Well, that's right. Well, please, you know, once the book's out or even beforehand, please get back in touch, and we'd love to have you back on the show. And of course, talking about how you as a writer as well, and of course your interpretation of Colombia from afar have developed, because I think that's part of it too, isn't it? It's like the second album, the second book syndrome. You're going to go through a different experience.
Yeah, definitely. And I think being away from Colombia, the only, obviously through my wife's family, we have connections still, and I've got lots of friends there still that we catch up with, and we've been back a few times. But I think most of the Colombia watching I could do now is just through a screen or through the newspaper or through the news. So you definitely get a different view when you're not living there and working in day out by just reading the news. It's a
So listen, everyone out there listening, we've been talking to Lachlan Page. It's a great thank you for his time, because, you know, organizing between Bogota and Sydney is not always the easiest thing to do. His book is Magical Disinformation. It's out now. You can buy it on Amazon in all, in all formats. There will be a second book. And I just, again, we must celebrate the someone's ability to sit down and write a book. So thank you so much for your time and for sharing some of your, insights into writing and, of course, how you put this book together about Colombia.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Richard. Thanks for your support and for your kind words. And like I said, you're the first person to give me the feedback and actually talk about the scene. So it makes it feel a bit more real now. So thank you very much. And keep up with the podcast. I really, really enjoy them.
Well, thank you very much indeed. So check out LachlanPageAuthor.com. That's his website. And there's links on the website to all the different platforms from where you can buy a copy of the book, Amazon, I can't remember the other ones, but they're all on there. Google.
Yeah, they're all there.
They're all there. Kobo.
Yeah, Barnes & Noble, Waterstones. Yeah. Everywhere, wherever you buy a book, you should be able to get a copy.
Excellent. Well, listen, it's a, you know, a big fraternal abrazo from Colombia all the way to Sydney. I know things are much better down where you are, but equally so. Stay safe, stay well, look after yourselves, look after your family. That goes to everybody out there listening. It's still a tough time here in Colombia, and I don't think we're getting the full information about what's going on. So please, everybody, you know, adhere to the warnings, adhere to the protocols and necessary behavior, because now the other night was the Velitas night, and I think there were a great many house parties. Well, there certainly were in my district because we could hear them and see them from our balcony. So please, everyone, remember that we are living through a pandemic at this moment. This has been episode 355 of the Colombia Calling podcast. I've been talking to author Lachlan Page. His book, Magical Disinformation, is available everywhere. You should get your books. You're able to get your books. Please buy it. Support indie writers and indie publishers. And we'll be back next week, and I think that will be the last episode of the Colombia Calling podcast for 2020, and then we'll be back in early 2021 with more interviews and more conversations about Colombia. Please consider backing us on the Patreon campaign. That's patreon.com. Just look up Colombia Calling. You'll find us for as little as $2 a month. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.